Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Slaughter Podcast will be discussing topics that some listeners may find disturbing.
If you're still listening, it's coming home.
It's coming home. So,
hi guys, welcome to another episode of Slaughter. I'm Lucy.
I'm Emma.
And we're going to be telling you some more UK true crime
stories.
And we finish each other's
sentences. So, I'm going to start off with an oldie worldie tale.
Oh, that means we can take the piss.
From a ye old book. Is it actually an old book? Not especially. it's from Strange Inhuman Deaths, Murder in Tudor England by John Bellamy. Mm. And so this story, when I was reading it, it feels very modern, as in like it's so drama filled.
Text messages.
No, it just feels like very Jeremy Kyle. Brilliant. I think like the people involved just use the court system to sort out all their problems.
Great.
Like, I've got an issue. Well, I'll take you to court then. We'll take you to court then. And just the kind of people that normal people don't spend all of their lives going to court. And why don't you realize that?
Because court's expensive.
Yeah. And I just feel like they were just complainers and like very much like that sort of culture that some people have these days of mm-hmm. If I've got an issue, someone else will sort it out then because we can't possibly do it. Was that a bit too moony?
No.
Okay. Well, that's what it's like. And also a lot of like a lot of relationship swapping. It's also quite Love Island-y too. So that's why I liked this one. So it all centers around a lady called Marjorie Freeman. And she was born in February 1559, and it was recorded in the pamphlets at the time that she was born to a poor family from Oxford. And then her first husband...
There are poor families in Oxford.
Well,
no, there's not.
I guess when it was all just fields and farms and...
Yeah.
And her first husband was called John Hoare, and he would try and claim that she was born a gentlewoman, just as he was a gentleman. But again, the events of their lives would suggest that neither of them were particularly well brought up. So it isn't said when John Hoare was born, but we do know that there had been an incredibly large age difference between them because their wedding took place in April of 1570, which would make Marjorie 11 years old at the time.
Oh, shit. That's very Romeo and Juliet.
Pretty gross. I mean, at the time, it was possible to be married at 12.
Ugh.
So even like, he couldn't even wait long enough for that to happen. I think Marjorie's parents, they sort of arranged this marriage, and it's probably likely that they just decided to lie about her age in order to encourage it to happen.
It's effectively adopting a daughter, really.
Pretty much.
Marrying a 12-year-old.
I always wonder that. Do you think they waited... Do you think if you married someone who was 12 that you waited for them to grow up a bit?
Sure,
or you just, like, had at it?
No.
But then they wouldn't have thought that they were young. They'd have thought, yep, she's 12. She's ripe for plucking.
Did they dress them more adult, like toddlers and tiara style?
I don't know. So, yeah, they said that John Hoare, their parents said that he was a man of good ability. And I think we probably thought that he was likely to make some money and get rid of her. It'll be fine. About 2 months after they were married, John had stolen £3 from a chest in Marjorie's father's house, along with a few other items and had just scarpered from Oxford. He did return after a short time to fetch his wife, but she clearly wasn't feeling the situation and Marjorie ran away. So it's not clear how she survived, but sort of within a year she returned to Oxford. So she's still 11-ish, 12-ish. And she wanted nothing to do with her husband whatsoever. So she put about a rumour that Marjorie's dead. Did you know?
What, she was saying herself was dead?
Yeah, she started a rumour that she was dead.
Brilliant.
And then went and hid in her parents' house. I think without them knowing. It doesn't say that her parents knew. But if you hide in your parents' house and they know about it, you're going to chill in your bedroom. Whereas Marjorie was found hiding in a chimney.
Yeah, they didn't know.
So she just told them she's dead and then ran home. I think it was more the fact it says in the pamphlet, it says that she was hiding behind some boughs in a chimney. But I can't imagine she's actually like squirreled up there. So I think maybe like a fireplace with something covering the entrance of the fireplace. So she's in a little sooty cave.
Maybe.
But either way, not great. So obviously when they found her, she was in huge trouble. And at the time, there were different courts, but the first port of call was always like the church council. Like, I think we looked at it with the witches' cases, that they would go to like the church authorities and they would decide if it was guilty or not to begin with. So Marjorie was taken to the church authorities for tricking her husband. And she defended her actions by claiming that, quote, he was not man sufficient.
Ooh.
Which basically meant that his dick didn't work.
She's not thinking that at 11.
I think she understood that. Well, yeah, probably. They knew that.
Oh, so she was making up a tale that she can't say, I'm 11, because they don't give a shit about that. So she's making up something that they might go fair enough. Right.
Yes. I think that's the biggest hope of her being able to get an annulment is if he couldn't fulfill the marriage responsibilities. So she said, well, he can't do his job, so I don't want him. But the church authorities did their duty and investigated these claims. God. And they found everything to be in working order.
They sound like a sexy nun, right?
That's what I'm thinking. Like, did they like bring in the women or did they just go around and go...
Was it like in Love Island where they do that sexy dance, right?
Yes. Like the priest just hitches up his habit and like starts bouncing on top of him. Like, did you get hard? Or maybe he just was like, jerk off in front of me, do it now. Whatever way it happened, it can't have been good.
No.
Like, never. No way. Never. I like to think that they had, like, a stripper turned nun who still used her powers.
Maybe.
They're like, she'll know how to do it. We'll win. So anyway, they found that everything was in working order. And so he said, no, yes, he's still your husband, you naughty little thing. And so Marjorie left again. This time she headed to London to look after an aunt. But Hoare also then moved to London to try and find her. It's thought that he probably gave up, and because London was crowded,
yeah,
pretty gross.
Let her go.
But in order to really put him off the scent, Marjorie did try and fake her own death again.
Whoa.
Although this time, rather than just put around the rumour, she actually got her name entered in the church book of St Margaret's in Westminster to say that she died as a victim of the plague. So in November 1571, so just a little over the year since they were married, John Hoare took another wife, a Maud Lewis. But in 1574, Hoare, just going about his business, found his now 15-year-old first wife living in a barber's house and he challenged her as his wife.
Sure.
I believe this is the legal term. We'll use it a lot, that he challenged her as his wife, saying, oh, you're mine. Get back here now. But, of course, she refused him and then found out that he was married to someone else. So she was like, well, you can't have me now if you've got someone else. So the case was taken to the Dean's Court in Westminster. And, of course, because Hoare had technically committed bigamy, he was ordered to be whipped through the streets.
Oh, God.
So it definitely didn't go his way.
No.
Which I quite like. So after this, Marjorie went off with a man who just referred to as Jones. And he was a waterman, which I guess is like he was trading along the canals and stuff on the waterways. Great. And they lived together pretty much as man and wife in Henley-on-Thames. But then, once again, Hoare managed to find Marjorie and challenged her. He's still living with Maud Lewis. He's still got his other wife.
So do you think either he's really in love with her or it's just like a you're not going to get one over on me type thing?
I think a little bit of both. I think Marjorie, although none of the sources claim to know anything about her appearance, I think she must have been considered a very attractive woman because throughout her life she's got men falling at her feet and wanting her. But I also think that this John Hoare is very clearly got serious issues and that he's obsessed with her. And this is probably the first recorded case of stalking.
Yeah.
Because he moves on and then, but he just can't let it go.
Yeah.
And it goes to really extreme lengths. So this time he found her again and challenged her. But Jones, who was there, he picked up sort of his, it says his staff, but I guess it might be more of like a pole that you used for like to be punting along. He picked it and he went to go and hit Hoare, but he lost his balance and fell between two barges. Apparently he hadn't thought it necessary to learn to swim before getting a job on the waterways. Okay. And so he drowned.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Well, that's fucking embarrassing, isn't it? I'll save you. Literally just wraps it and dies.
Yeah. It's just really sad. I mean, Hoare wasn't held responsible for his death. Like, it was definitely just he fell and drowned.
Oh my
God. He was the worst protector she could have had.
The worst waterman.
Yeah. So, like I said, although he wasn't, Hoare wasn't culpable or charged for this, shit did begin to hit the fan for him. Marjorie obviously left again. His current wife, then Maud Lewis, died. He was sent to appear in court then in 1575. Basically, he'd been grooming young children on the street and then getting them to go begging for him, like pimping out street children. So then he was, and he got caught for this. So he was put in the pillory, which is the one with the wrists and the head.
one with the wrists and the head.
Well, because people often call those the stocks and...
They're the feet ones, aren't they?
They're the feet ones.
Yep.
Get it right. Stocks, feet, pillory, wrists and head. So he was in the pillory and then he was sent to Bridewell Prison, which I had a little look into because they just keep seeing to send him to Bridewell and then letting him out. And basically it was a prison, but it was for the poor and disorderly, it says. So you could be put in there for really, like, just generally being
on the street.
Yeah, and unsightly. They didn't need much to be able to throw you in there. And it was also linked to, it was like a sister prison with Bethlehem Institution for the Insane. So they sort of, like, switched between them. If they just thought you were a bit too much to handle, they sent you there. So it wasn't really a criminal prison as such. So he was sent to Bridewell, and then we don't really hear much about him for a while. 2 years later, so we're in 1577 now, and Marjorie's 18. So still quite young, even for the time. And she was working as a maid for the Hungate family. And then she became involved with a rich upholsterer who was sort of friends with the family, called Richard Whitehand. Now, she must have been attractive, because if you're a maid working for a family...
Yeah, I was going to say, that's like, a step up, isn't it?
Yeah, a business associate comes to visit your house and falls in love with the servant.
Yeah.
Pretty big deal. So he was called Robert Whitehand.
Because normally, wouldn't they just, like, knock, like, shag him on the side?
Yeah, sure. You wouldn't be like, I've got to marry this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she must have been hot. They didn't even have makeup or anything.
Hmm.
So he asked for a hand, and Marjorie explained... She told him of her baggage and said, look, I've got this crazy ex-husband who keeps finding me and demanding that I go with him. And together, he took her. He was like, this isn't okay. And they sought the advice of several clergy members. And they basically said, look, because he remarried to Maud Lewis, he was adulterous. And basically, your marriage to him is void now. I don't think it's going to hold up
Brilliant.
In any kind of court. So Marjorie married Whitehand in August of 1577. And Hoare found out about this, because obviously they have to read out the banns and they have to make marriage licenses public. So when he heard this news, he didn't take it lying down. And it says that he like railed against them in the streets. He was causing disturbances. He was confronting them. He was screaming and shouting and hurling abuse. And so
have a bit of dignity, mate.
Exactly. So he was arrested and sent to Bridewell again. He obviously wasn't getting on well there, because from then they sent him to Newgate, which was
the proper prison, yeah.
Badass prison. So it's possible. It doesn't, obviously, at the time they wouldn't have considered it. He quite possibly had mental health issues. He was definitely had an unhealthy obsession with Marjorie. But then, to be honest, that's probably society's fault for telling men that they own women.
A little bit.
Like, if someone stole your gold, you'd probably go this mad trying to get it back.
I know, but also let's not excuse his horrible behaviour.
Oh, no, not at all. So,
because clearly she didn't want to be found, and she'd been quite clear about that from the very start.
Oh, yeah, he needs to just leave her alone. He's marrying other people. Like, get over it. Build a bridge. So, do you ever say that to the kids?
No.
All the time.
I go, right? All the time.
Get over it.
Build a bridge.
I'm like, or sometimes I'm like, can we all just move on with our lives now?
I always say, if they say like, can I start on the next page? I go, I'm not going to cry about it.
I might have that one. I'll
Like, can I do it like this? If you do, I'm not going to cry about it.
I like that. So the new Mr. and Mrs. Whitehand then obtained an official divorce from the Bishop of London. And Hall believed that the couple had bribed the bishop with silks and other fancy materials in order for this to happen, and was just convinced that he still had husband's rights over Marjorie. So he then started to try and get a bit of a team together. He got two of his friends to go and entreat the bishop on his behalf, but probably more likely just threaten him. So all three of them, Hall and his two friends, were all sent to Newgate Prison for this. Then when they were discharged, they let him go, but it was this really odd arrangement that I didn't quite understand how it would come about. So they said, you can go, but you're not to have any contact with Mr. Whitehand or Marjorie. So a basic restraining order. And then also on the condition that he would marry a woman called Catherine Richardson.
What?
And then they said, once you do, we'll give you a £10 bonus.
Do you think that's like the prison warden's wayward child? He's trying to...
Well, they mentioned something about that she lived in the bishop's house, so I think she was some sort of ward of the state. And I think maybe they were thinking, oh, if we give him another woman to marry, he'll stop banging on about this other one.
Not how stalking works.
But then also giving him £10 as well. Like, you're releasing him from prison. Like, this parole deal is the best one.
Is this woman agreeing to this as well?
I don't think they gave a shit.
Fucking hell.
So for whatever reason that came about, it was really confusing. He was let out and married a woman in 1578. But then the marriage was made void due to an order by the bishop. The reasons are unspecified why.
Just changed his mind.
I think it's probably the fact that Hall breached the conditions because he filed a lawsuit against Whitehand and Marjorie.
Right.
So he wasn't obeying the rules. But this is what I mean. The bishop's getting way too involved in these people's lives. Like, okay, marry this person. Don't see this person. Do this. And they just all go along with it. They're like, yeah, tell me what to do. Like, help me out. Get my wife back. Get me a new wife. So Marjorie Freeman, although now married to Whitehand, had definitely been the victim of Hall's obsession and stalking. But then something happened in 1580. Where after 3 years of marriage to Whitehand, she became determined to be rid of him by any means possible. So she had a lover now called John Shaw, and together they prepared to poison Whitehand, even though he'd helped her,
got her on her side for a lot of this.
Now she just wants to poison other people. So Marjorie served her husband a dish of poisoned herring, after which Whitehand became sick and his body became extremely swollen, and 2 days later he was dead.
Fuck.
Marjorie did inherit a large fortune from Whitehand's death, and so Shaw was eager to tie the knot and seal this deal. So they did have banns read and they were all good to go. But the day before the wedding, Marjorie fled to Yorkshire, by the arrangement of the Hungate family, where she met up with a Robert Hungate, and he was the brother of her previous employer when she was working as a maid and met Whitehand. So now the brother of them was like, I want to marry this girl.
Oh my God.
And they were married in that December.
So they, because they, this family were like, well, she's pretty rich now. It's fine if she marries one of ours. She maybe had, he'd come a calling before and she'd be like, oh, he's a bit of a all right.
Yep. So she'd had this whole little conspiracy with their family to help her evade the man who'd helped her poison her husband. She's a sneaky little madam.
She is a little bit of a sneak.
So Shaw was now absolutely fuming. He's like a conspirator in murder, and then now she's fucked up and left him, and he's embarrassed he was going to get married. So he followed in Hoare's footsteps and began a campaign of hate in the streets of London, causing trouble for the couple whenever he came across them in the street. And so he too was put in jail for a short period of time. And then upon his release, rather than let things go, he decided to join forces with Marjorie's old aggressor, Hoare.
Oh my God. The dream team.
Yes. I mean, how Love Island is that? Like, get the two exes together to go and challenge them.
Yeah. So, and it's like the bishop's the producer, isn't it?
Yeah, you're just like watching all this happen. So now Shaw and Hoare are like the worst tag team ever. And apparently...
Right, should we just shout them in the street again? No, I've tried that.
Yeah. Well, Hoare was trying to adhere to this sort of restraining order. So they came up with this plan where Hoare would be able to go and act out his... not fantasies, because he meant he would be able to go and harass Marjorie, but Shaw would facilitate that to happen. So because back in the day everyone sort of like made their own clothes and stuff, you would recognize someone pretty much by, oh, that's his jacket, because
he literally always wears it.
Yeah. So Shaw gave Hoare his clothes to wear so that Hoare could go about without them realizing straight away it was him. So this Sunday, the 1st of October in 1581, Hoare was dressed in Shaw's clothes. And then when Marjorie was seated in church, he basically went in and just stood in front of her for the whole service. I just stood up facing her.
What?
Well, how intimidating would that be? Everyone sat down in church. Like, no one's going to say anything because church is happening. It's very serious. It's the 1500s. We're going to go to hell. And so you just stood up looking at her.
Some of those hardcore biddies at the back.
Well, apparently.
Sit down. I can't see God.
They were just whipping out the popcorn, apparently, because he just stood there, like, just being creepy as fuck.
Oh, my God.
And then when she left the church, that's when he started shouting at her and hurling more abuse.
See, it's the same plan. Should we go shout in the street again a bit? Yeah, okay.
I think they just wanted to ruin her reputation so much. But now she's rich and hot. I don't think there's much can be done.
No.
And she's got a rich, like, influential husband now. So he's going to try and crush these guys. So Shaw, now in cahoots with Hoare, began to try and attack Marjorie from a range of different angles. So they began a case with the church authorities. They made a complaint to the Privy Council. And then they went to the Court of High Commission, all basically on the same thing. Shaw, I think Shaw was maybe had a bit more brains than Hoare did, because he was... It was only once he got involved that these lawsuits started to happen in earnest, because they were all claiming that Hungate was illegally detaining Hoare's wife. So Shaw wasn't trying to get her back for himself. He was just wanting to ruin her, and he was using Hoare's obsession to make it happen. So they were unsuccessful in all those proceedings, as well as they also applied to the Queen's Bench. And basically now the only avenue left was Chancery. So Chancery was... a specific kind of court. It could overrule findings in other courts. It was really your last chance saloon. So Hoare claimed that now, once they'd filed with Chancery, Marjorie and Hungate then began plotting ways to get rid of Shaw. So they conspired, the Hungates. They conspired. They had him served with these fake papers saying that he needed to appear at the Queen's Bench.
But when Hoare?
They passed them to Shaw, John Shaw.
Okay.
So when he... showed up, they were like, well, we don't have any charges filed against you, you're not wanted here today. So he then returned to Charing Cross, where Marjorie's brothers Richard and Thomas Freeman were laying in wait for him, and the pair ambushed Shaw and stabbed him to death.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's the murder for you.
I had a drowning and a poison, but fucking hell.
Yeah, and her brothers who've just been, I don't know,
where they come from?
Were there any of these weddings? I don't know. But now they're here for a stabbing. They're well up for that. There's some discrepancy because the Hungates claimed that what happened was the brothers had met Shaw, had a really heated argument with him. They'd all got their daggers out and Shaw had been sort of like cut in the head. And that he'd then been alive for 2 weeks with like a handkerchief and a bandage on his head, going about his normal business. And then he eventually died 2 weeks later when God came to visit him. So they had two surgeons who also testified that this was the case, that he'd had an injury and then gone about and he'd eventually died later. But Hungate's so much richer that they could have paid two surgeons to say what they wanted them to say and to find what they wanted them to
find. And everyone was corrupt then anyway.
Of course. And it said that in the court, one of the judges were just like, he just loved Marjorie and didn't really want to hear a bad word against her. But
anyone that beautiful could never do anything terrible.
Of course. Her brothers, they did have an arrest warrant out for them. When people came to the home to arrest the brothers, they were sort of held off at the door while they made an escape out the back. So they were on the run with the help of Hungate, of course. So now Hoare then joined forces with John Shaw's two brothers to try and seek justice for his death and to ensure that Marjorie and Robert Hungate were held responsible for it. So they campaigned to the jurors.
Again, they're just more brothers at the last minute. Like.
Yeah, just random. No one gave a shit. They're just all here for the fight. That's all they want. So they campaigned to the jurors at the coroner's inquest and saying that, come on, you know this is true. You know it was the Hungates, but only the Freeman brothers were the named people at fault for this murder. They were trying really hard to get Marjorie and Robert counted as conspirators and accessories, but they couldn't do it. So then they filed a bill of indictment against the Hungates during the next sessions of this case at Newgate. It was unsuccessful and they kept bringing it up at the next few sessions in this murder case and they just kept getting thrown out. Eventually someone found an error in the bill and it just was like, that's it, stop bringing it to us. So the Hungates sort of got off on a technicality. So then Hoare and the Shaws paid a man named Young to lie in court in front of the Privy Council and say that Marjorie had tried to pay him to poison Shaw when he was in prison, which he did. And following this, Marjorie was then charged as an accessory in the murder of John Shaw. So she gave herself up immediately, basically, because her brothers were on the run for the murder. She thought, if I get on trial now, before the murderers have been found guilty, I've got much more chance of getting acquitted than if they've already been found guilty, my brothers, they're going to say, well, obviously you helped them. Yeah. So it was much better if she just did it now and there was no evidence, there was no murderer officially found. It'd be a lot easier. So Robert Shaw didn't want it to go smooth for her, so they were in court, and at the last minute, he sort of stood up and produced a paper from his pocket saying that the trial had been moved up a level to the Queen's Bench now, hoping that he would get the upper hand. But it really didn't matter because Marjorie was acquitted and allowed to go completely free. And that's sort of where the records stop.
So the brothers were never caught and...
No, it's known that Marjorie and Robert Hungate then, because they're fucking petty and couldn't just let it go that we're free, we've got away with everything. They then put in their own complaint to the Privy Council about the fact that they were being held up for all these charges. But then it doesn't go into, there's not any recorded things after that. So it's pretty likely that Marjorie got away with definitely the murder of her husband, Whitehand, for poisoning him.
Uh-huh.
Pretty sure she was involved in the conspiracy to kill John Shaw. And then that was it. Got away with it. And all because Hoare was a stalking bastard.
I didn't like any of the people in that story.
Yeah, they were all
a bit like Love Island.
Yeah, all nasty people. And you want to read about them because it's drama, but you don't actually want to meet any of them in the dark.
I'm not rooting for any of them.
There you go.
Bro.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
All right, so my story today is the story of David Jaggers. And a lot of this information comes from a documentary called Britain's Darkest Taboos. But if you enjoy what I tell you about it and you want to find out more, you can actually read a book by the victim. So I'll tell you about that at the end. But a lot of it is from the point of view of Vicky Jaggers, who is sister of David Jaggers.
See, Jaggers is a character in, I want to say, is either Nicholas Nickleby or David Copperfield, I think.
Tom Hardy.
No, Charles Dickens.
Oh.
And I remember reading it and being like, that's such a weird made-up name, of course, the character's not particularly nice. He's like a lawyer who's a little bit creepy and seedy. And then, oh, it's a real name. So interesting to know.
I always think of You've Got the Moves like Jagger.
Of course. Not actual Mick Jagger. Yeah. Just the song that referenced him later.
So Vicky was born in Essex and she was the youngest of four children and she had two brothers and a sister. Very much a daddy's girl, and her father, Len, was her idol. So she lived with her mother and father, but Len, her father, had a son from a previous relationship. So David was her half-brother. And she had quite a close bond with David from quite young as well. So David sort of took a shine to her. Like, he really liked her. He'd give her loads of sweets. He'd cuddle her. He was a few years older, but he wasn't like an adult when she was a child. So yeah. There's a few years between them, and everyone was sort of like, oh, it's really cute. He's really sweet. And they were at school together. So at secondary school, he was very protective. He wouldn't let people bully her. So he's kind of like a nice older brother, whereas my older brother did none of that. Literally ignored me.
Yeah.
Not interested.
He's not protective in the slightest.
No.
He'd be like, sure, like, go suck on a bag of dicks. Like, he's not bothered.
Yeah, bothered. So David would get into quite aggressive fights at school, with other boys, which isn't, I wouldn't say, alarm bells at that point, because a lot of kids are like that. But outside of school, it started to escalate. So him and his mates would steal cars and they started going joyriding. And then he got a criminal record by the time he was age 13. So already he's a bit antisocial there. And then age 13, he asked his parents for an air rifle so he and his friends could shoot animals. But he didn't tell them that, obviously. Can I have an air rifle to shoot animals?
Yeah, I just want to kill some innocent things.
So they bought him.
What did they think they wanted it for? I always think that with guns.
Yeah, to shoot what?
No gun about the guns. If you're buying a gun, you're going to shoot something. What is the innocent pastime that these boys are getting up to? Target practice. Brilliant. Why do they need to be better at shooting if they're not going to shoot a fucking thing? What are you trying to hit? What do you need to get dead on in a bullseye?
Yeah.
Fucking ridiculous.
I feel like there was a stage. It's not a common thing now, but where everyone got like BB guns or air rifles.
Yeah.
Or like it was like a cool thing.
To like shoot people in the arse, wasn't it?
Yeah,
with a BB gun.
Why?
Like, oh, look, I got shot with a BB gun. You can see it still. Yeah, you've well
it
done.
It does fucking hurt. I got shot by one once. So they bought him this air rifle, and then within 2 weeks he was in really big trouble because him and his friends had been going down to sort of the back of the garden. There was like this area that you could sort of wander through and you could see like the railway station, and there was just a railway worker sort of on duty and they were shooting at him and nearly
hit him.
Of course
they fucking were.
So they got in trouble again. So the family sort of decided on a career change. They didn't really like that he was getting into trouble, and they just thought it was a good idea, which I think is a terrible idea, to become temporary pub managers. So basically
just temporary, like we're not in this for the long haul, we're here to fuck things up and leave.
Well, it's like the supply workers of pub managing.
Oh, okay.
So I guess like say the pub manager quits or leaves or dies or whatever it is, they'd go in and just fill in until they hired someone permanent.
You'd think in that position you'd want someone who knew how to run a pub to come in as the stand-in manager.
With four children, one of which is a delinquent. So they'd go to a pub and they'd run it for a few weeks. But obviously it's not a great lifestyle for these children. So they're sort of lugging kids around the country. They're living above a pub. They're going to different schools all the time. They're bored. They're up late. They're going to bed early and the parents aren't there with them. So it's not very like, it's not a very nice atmosphere. Antisocial hours that the parents are working. They can't do nice things together. Can't put them to bed. So the lifestyle made it quite difficult for them to make friends or have any routine. And their education was poor as a result. They didn't have consistent teachers. And I guess the main thing is they didn't have a support network. And we've talked about this in sort of child abuse cases that we've looked at, that if kids don't have regular teachers to talk to, if something happens within the family, who do they even go to? It's so, so important, that role that teachers play. So 1986, Vicky's 12 years old and David's 17.
God, I'm just trying to anticipate what's going to happen, because this is a lot about a brother and sister.
Yeah.
It was from Britain's Darkest Taboo.
Yeah.
At some point, he's going to fuck his sister, isn't
yeah.
he? Oh.
It's coming soon. Hold your breath. So she went to bed at 9 p.m. one night, and her brother came into her room about 10:30. And this is sort of the kind of time that her parents might come up and just check that she's in bed. So she just didn't really think much of it, goes back to sleep. And she feels someone get into the bed. And it's pitch black, literally no light, but she knows that it's her brother. And he rapes her and he leaves. And she's crying, traumatized, disgusted. It was from behind. That's as much detail as they went into
on
the documentary.
That's too much detail.
Yeah. Didn't threaten her, but she was just terrified. I mean, she's 12 years old. She doesn't really know what sex is. Now, professionals have said that looking at the way that he committed the crime, and they talked about this on the documentary as well, that it's quite likely that it's something that he had either witnessed or experienced himself because
yeah,
of the nature of the
crime. Yeah,
because
why would you go for that?
It's such an unusual... And it's incest, and it's... He's a terrible, terrible person throughout, but they did think it is kind of, if you look at other cases that are similar, he probably had some sexual abuse or a
That'd
porn addiction.
Be really weird if that was your first sexual experience for him. Like, obviously, it's horrific for her, but for him, for that, your usual first sexual experience, you wouldn't be like, okay, so I'm going to jump in and...
My young sister. So he's, I would say, probably definitely a psychopath.
Especially in 86. Like, I don't think she wouldn't have had sex ed in school at 12 years old in the 80s.
No.
Oh, God.
No, because what's that, year 7 or year 8? So if you are, it's minimal. It's like egg and sperm. It's not special cuddle. So the next day, he acts as if nothing's even happened. So she's been traumatized all night. Didn't tell her parents. And then he acts as if nothing's happened. So she's really confused. Things, have I made this up? Is this normal?
Yeah, what actually even happened?
Yeah. And she said she didn't know if it was maybe something that everyone does and no one talks about it. She's just all over the place. Horrible, horrific experience. But no one spoke to her about it. But she feels too scared to tell anyone. She's scared of him. And he does it again the next few nights. And she gets out of this situation because she ends up telling her parents that she's really scared. She thinks there's ghosts in the building. And she begins to sleep on her parents' floor. And he doesn't go near her again after that. But it horrific experience. But not only the fact that it's happened to her, the fact that she's not telling anyone. And she's just got to live with this herself and all bottled up. And I just feel so horrific for Vicky. She's very eloquent about it.
Thank God she eventually said something. Yeah.
So she then, to add on insult to injury and to make things a million times more traumatizing for her, she finds out that she's pregnant at age 12.
No.
She tells her parents, but she says that it was a boy at school. David moves out. He goes. And she makes up a story saying that she had sex in a field with some boy that lived on a caravan park. And the police do come and investigate. And they actually ask the mother, because of her age, and say, could it be Len, the father? And she says, absolutely not. You'd never do that. And they say, could it be David, the brother? And she says she doesn't know. But without any evidence, they sort God, of let
if
it
you're
go.
Not saying absolutely not, then... How fucking creepy is your son?
Yeah.
If you can say absolutely not about the dad and not the same thing about the son, you know he's weird.
Yeah. And when it did all come out, the mother sort of says she wasn't overly that surprised. So, this guy is horrific beyond belief. So, Vicky gives birth to a little girl called Kirsty.
God, they made her go through with it.
Yeah. And her mother raises the baby while Vicky goes to boarding school. But Vicky does say that...
To be honest, surely boarding school is like the best thing right now. Just leave all these people behind.
Leave safety. But also she says with Kirsty, with her daughter, she just looks at this baby and she feels love. She doesn't think about this horrible past. And in some ways that, you know, that it's nice that wasn't sort of at the forefront of her mind with the relationship with her daughter. But a horrible situation for her to be in. Just absolutely horrific. David's now living elsewhere. Now, he begins to date a single mother called Helen Mitchell. Quite young. She's got two kids. She basically... So, David's mother's called Avril. And she... I think the parents sort of settled in one place for a while. And David, although he didn't live there, he started just hanging around the street.
Where his parents were.
Outside his parents' house. And this Helen Mitchell lived opposite. And she would see him hanging out. And she went out and spoke to him and said, you know, what's going on? You're all right. And, you know, he's like 17, 18, 19 at this point. And she let him into the flat and he sort of charmed her a little bit and they started a relationship. Ew. I mean, I think she's obviously quite vulnerable. She's a single mother. She's on her own with the kids.
Exactly. But... You don't need a fucking 17-year-old boy hanging around the house either. He is not going to be helping that situation.
No.
What's he going to do? Look after the kids? No. Have a job? No. Tidy up? No.
Their relationship. Their relationship very quickly becomes violent and she begins having black eyes and she's making excuses, saying that she's hit herself on a cupboard and things like that, which is obviously clearly bollocks. And he would just say nasty things about her in front of people. So they spoke about how, like, people came over for dinner and he'd just say, oh, I don't want to see you chewing with your mouth open. It's disgusting to him. Things like that. Just
that is disgusting.
It is disgusting, but humiliating her in front of people.
Oh, he said it to her. I thought he was saying it to the guests.
No.
Oh, shit, that's really bad. Sorry.
No, but, I mean, it is gross. But
no, but that just putting someone down in front of other people. Yeah,
it's finding something to comment on.
That's one of those huge indicators of domestic abuse, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's finding something to comment on and it's making her feel small.
Yeah. Like she doesn't deserve anything, all that kind of really nasty emotional stuff.
Yeah. And her two daughters, who were 4 and 2 years old, he would break their toys. He'd steal money from Helen. And the children's father, he was still on the scene. He tried to intervene. He tried because he didn't want his daughters around this piece of shit man. But she'd always make excuses for David. So he sort of, unless she's willing to escape him, it kind of, he didn't really know what else to do.
God.
So he just did what he can.
Everyone's just going to end up going away to boarding school and he'll be left wandering around this town on his own. No one can go near him.
That would have been brilliant, but it's far worse than that.
Sometimes I wish we didn't do a murder podcast.
So Helen phones her sister, Sheila, one night for help. And she turns up and she finds David. And he's got this sort of like suitcase of knives. Sort of like cooking knives, I think. But I think they were massive. And he's got them out. And she says, getting Helen, I'm getting the kids, we're going. So she gets them from the house, and one of the kids says, now older in this documentary, that he had actually held one of the knives up to Helen's throat before Sheila had arrived as well. So he puts all the knives away, she takes Helen and the kids, but she goes back to him. It's sort of that. He's got her. He's doing that thing of like, oh, I'm so sorry. I need to get help. I'm gonna change, and she believes it. Which is, you know, tragically a story that we hear a lot from abused women. I know that some of the students watch a program called Murdered by My Boyfriend, and it's exactly that again, and it's based on a true story, but it's a dramatization where she just keeps accepting him back until the worst happens. So this is the worst it's going to get, but so one night Helen comes back from a night out, having left David home with her children, and he loses his shit. Obviously, she's been on a night out, and he strangles her to death. It still does get a little bit worse. So then the 4-year-old daughter comes down, and he tells her mummy's asleep, tells her to kiss mummy, and then he's going to take her to nanny's. So she kisses her mum's dead body, and she can still remember this now, before they leave. But also upstairs is Helen's 14-year-old sister, and he goes upstairs and rapes her as well.
Oh, God.
I know. So, moving on.
Because it's all just a very horny situation right now.
I mean, he's the worst.
Ugh.
So, he takes the two children to his mother's, and then breaks down crying, saying he's killed Helen and he needs to get help. Which, I mean, where has this empathy suddenly come from?
It's not empathy though, is it? That's him thinking about himself.
Yeah.
He's not thinking, oh God, I've killed her. That's a horrible thing to do to the child's mother. He's thinking, oh God, I've killed a person. How do I get out of it?
So she phones the police and reports the murder, and he turns himself in immediately. So he doesn't.
That should be the end of this story. So I'm worried that there's more pages.
Yeah.
If you admit to a murder, how is this going any further?
So Vicky Jaggers, she feels immense guilt because she never reported her rape, and feels like maybe he would have been away. He would have been in prison during this time if she had spoken out about it. But obviously we know why she was so young. She was worried. But he's convicted. But he's convicted of manslaughter and rape of the daughter.
How is it possibly a manslaughter? How do you accidentally strangle someone?
I don't know how this happened.
Until dead. Like, it's really hard to do.
The most disgusting thing about this, he gets 6 years. He does 4 years and he's out.
Oh my God.
For murdering his girlfriend and then raping her daughter.
Like, straight, even the fact that they knew there was a rape and a murder. Like, you know that, oh, he manslaughtered her to death, but then wanted to do a rape after.
Yeah.
Like, that tells that, even that connection of those two events says that he's really fucked up. Of course, really he meant to murder her. If you accidentally kill someone, even more so, you don't go and have sex with someone. Ew. Yeah.
Disgusting. So, Vicky's father now dies of cancer. And David, after 4 years of being in prison, he's free again. And she has to be around him again, which is even more traumatizing for her. So he, at one point, goes around her house and says, why don't you care about our dad? I think she responds with something like, he's not your dad, even though he is. He's,
you're just trying to get him to fuck off, father, aren't you?
I think she's just so, like, I think she's trying to say, you're nothing like him. He was a good man and you're a piece of shit. He strangles her, not to death, but he strangles her until she turns blue, confirming to her how dangerous he is, how scared she is to talk about, you know, what he's done to her. The good news for Vicky is that she moves on from all of this and she's married to the most supportive, lovely man, and she has 4 children of her own, but this isn't where the story ends. So David sort of, there's not a lot about what he's doing in between that. Outside of this documentary in the book, there isn't a lot of information about this crime stuff.
Who'd want to write about him?
I know, exactly.
He's horrid.
But it's when her children, who become teenagers, go and stay at her mother's. This is when everything comes to light. So David happens to be there, but she doesn't know he's there. So she sends kids around to grandma's. David's probably gone away for a while, been here, there and everywhere, probably being abusive to some more women, as he does. And then he comes back and he's at her mother's. And she finds out, I think she gets a phone call or something, that David has shouted at one of her daughters. But the plan is that they're all going to stay there overnight. She races round, says, get my fucking kids out of the house.
Yeah, he raped a 14-year-old girl. Surely when he was convicted for raping a 14-year-old girl, they would have thought, did he rape you as well? Remember that time when you were a young child and you got raped? Like, could it have been that? Although I suppose Vicky hadn't said it was rape, had she? No, she'd have said, I was with consensual. A boy, I liked him, da-da-da.
Yeah.
But even so, he rapes 14-year-old girls.
Don't leave him with any 14-year-old girls.
We're not having a big
sleepover.
Again.
No. So the family are confused by her reaction. Weirdly,
he's a rapist. He's an actual pedo rapist. What's confusing about the situation?
So
he strangled her. He turned her blue. Like,
well, they don't know about that.
Oh my God.
To be fair,
I'm so confused.
She says, so she shouts out, "My children are coming home. He's not going to do that again." And they're all like, "Do what? What's going on?
Rape a 14-year-old girl? You don't need any other information."
True. So David turns to his mother and says, "Everyone's going to hate me now." Why did they not hate him already? He's been in prison for strangling his girlfriend.
I need to, like, take out an advert on a bridge and we're just saying big letters like, he raped a 14-year-old girl. Obviously, he did other bad things too, but why are they like, what? Like, they're just like, oh, 3 strikes till you're out. Like, you only raped 1 14-year-old girl, to my knowledge, and accidentally murdered another person. Oh my God, I can't cope.
Accidentally my ass as well.
The Unabomber would never have done this.
Okay. So, Stop with this love affair of the Unabomber.
I'm bringing it back.
So,
I think I need to rewatch it. Like, he's a wholesome villain that I can get behind. And when I say get behind, I don't mean support his actions. I mean support him as a human being.
All right.
I'm not quite sure what I mean by that either.
Okay. So, Vicky's husband takes her home and he says, tell me the truth, because that reaction was weird, which I don't think it was. She tells him everything. She tells him about the rape. She tells him about how he's the father of her daughter. She is completely clear with him. And he is the most loving, wonderful man. He supports the shit out of her. He is there for her. I mean, obviously, he doesn't really know what to say. But he's like, I'm going to stand by you. I'm going to look after you. So he goes and tells her mother about her being raped by her brother. So that she doesn't have to. He goes and deals with it. He goes to tell the mother. The mother's response is, I need Vicky to know that I believe her, which I think probably was the most important thing, because Vicky's been wrestling with this idea that maybe no one will believe me, maybe the family will turn on me, they'll think that I'm being malicious. But she says, I believe her, tell her that. And then the husband and her mother go and tell Kirsty, the daughter, which she takes really well. And
that's
just
got to have been a difficult conversation.
She just wants to support her mum. She just wants to ask if her mum's okay. And I think that's another reason that Vicky didn't want to say anything, because how is her daughter going to deal with the fact that she is a baby of incest? You know, it's, I mean, at least she's 18 by this point. She's a bit older. You know, she's not going to go through school with that knowledge.
Yeah, hopefully she won't be defined by it.
Yeah. So the whole family gets together, they cry together, and all of Vicky's fears about what people are going to say to her are gone, because everyone's just being supporting of loving and brilliant. David now goes on the run. So while on the run, he begins a relationship with a 20-year-old dancer, and Vicky reports this rape to the police after having told her family, and they begin looking for him. And at this point, this 20-year-old goes to speak to David, who's now quite a lot older than her, and says, I want to end the relationship. She doesn't know he's on the run. She doesn't know he's dangerous. She doesn't know everything that's happened. He pulls
but
out...
let's be honest, he probably wasn't being particularly nice to her anyway.
No, he was probably abusing her. So he pulls out a knife and he forces her to get into his van. And they drive off and he holds her hostage. And he drove from Southend to Ely. They spend the night in a travel lodge. And then the next day he releases her.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. And then he phones a friend saying, I need to kill myself because I'm evil. Which I think...
Shrug you emoji. Got a point.
Probably the smartest thing you've ever said. So police begin to close in and they arrest him. On him he had an... It says an imitation handgun. Yeah. I don't know. Does that mean it works or it just looks like a handgun?
I thought it just meant it looked like it.
Okay. And he's interviewed for hours and literally says no comment to everything. I don't know if he had a lawyer there with him, because they might have been suggesting that's probably a good course of action. But they have a DNA test. They prove he's Kirsty's father. Even if he argued it was consensual, it would legally be rape at that point. She was 12, he was 17.
There's not a single 12-year-old that's like, oh, yeah.
No. No.
God's sake.
So he's convicted of rape, incest, kidnapping, and having a replica firearm. He gets 11 years. And then the families have sort of looked out for each other after this. So Helen's children have looked after each other, because obviously they've lost their mother. So they've got a very close bond that, you know, they look after each other. Vicky's family, particularly her husband, have supported her. And she's written a book about her experience called Silenced. Now, the scariest thing about this is he was sentenced in 2005. He got 11 years. And I could not find anything about him being released, about what's being happened.
Well, then he's not been released, or he's been released but he's had a name change.
That's what I'm scared about. So he's obviously still a really dangerous person and should not be out of prison. I'll put a photo of him on Instagram. I don't know if we can, maybe as a community, try and see if we can find where he is. But I genuinely think he should not be out there doing what... I mean, he's a terrible, terrible person.
Unless he's been transferred to some sort of mental institution.
I would hope so. But I looked and looked and I couldn't find anything about where he was. I know legally I can't say, right, what, because he's done his time for the crimes he's been convicted of. But I just... Be careful.
You retroactively need some years for that murder he did.
Yeah.
When he only did 4. That doesn't even cover the rape.
No. He shouldn't be released. I'm hoping that he's still somewhere locked up. I imagine if he's been released, the police are keeping a very close eye on him. Regardless. Can they do that?
Well, also, if we all just don't put up with any kind of domestic abuse, too.
Yeah, just look after yourselves. Anyway, that...
We need a number for some, like, support.
there is a 24-hour national domestic violence free phone helpline that you can call on 0808 2000 247 if you're in the UK. Just don't put up with any shit from anyone.
Can we discuss the point that you read a phone number out as an actual number? 2,247.
Do you do that?
Never.
2000.
Treble zero. Why don't we treble everything a lot more? I like it. Anyway, thank you for listening, even if it pained you as much as it did me to hear that totally gross case. But thank you for putting it in your brain.
I mean, it wasn't fun, I'll be honest, but I think Vicky deserves some book sales.
Yeah.
I think she's got a story to tell. I think she's a brave, brave person. And so rather than giving money to Patreon, buy a copy of Vicky's book this week.
Although, that's a nice idea.
We will take the Patreon money if you want.
Yeah, and then sign up the next month when you've read the book.
Yeah. And you can email us at slaughterthepodcast@gmail.com. Review us. Just tell your friends. Just shout from the rooftops about how brilliant we are.
The actual rooftops, please.
And remember, listening to Slaughter does not make you a psycho, but shagging your sister definitely is in that league.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.